Here we go.
Happy summer, KGNU listeners. Welcome to Black Talk. My name is Michelle Simpson. And Black Talk, for those of you who are just tuning in for the first time, is a co-creation of the Boulder County NAACP and KGNU. Black Talk is a monthly segment that centers Black voices, Black thought, and Black vision. And for quite a while, I've wondered about Black folks with disabilities. Somehow in conferences and conversations on my campus, CU Boulder, even though there are offices and resources available to students with disabilities, I just don't see the representation of Black people. I just often, as I said, wonder, where are Black folks with disabilities? In terms of the literature, just in terms of the larger conversation. And I often wonder, where are their voices? And perhaps they're being heard somewhere, but I don't seem to be plugged in. So today, I am delighted to have as our guest, Kiana Madison. And just a little background, Kiana and I met several years ago. And I can't tell you how absolutely grateful I am that our paths crossed again. So by way of an introduction, that Kiana had a hand in scripting, because I wanted to make certain to get it right, because that's important. Kiana is a disabled, pansexual, queer, African-American woman artist, mindfulness teacher, inner peace gardener, which I think is my favorite. I love that, inner peace gardener and light bearer. So Kiana, something that I know about you is that you were given a fairly short life expectancy. In other words, wasn't it something like 8 to 10 years to be exact?
Yes.
That you had 8 to 10 years left from that point on?
Yes.
So say something if you would, about that prognosis, kind of when it was rendered, how that impacted you.
Yeah.
Kind of fill us in on that part of your story.
Yeah, I was going through my cancer previvor treatments because I have several cancer gene mutations that give me a significantly high chance of developing ovarian, uterine, and breast cancers. And after going through emergency surgeries, I had a complication that led to a near-death experience. And those complications impacted my body in such a way where I developed all these new invisible disabilities that cause chronic pain, chronic fatigue, and my immune system is not functioning the way it probably should. And at that time, some of my specialists had informed me that the combination of all my risk and health landscape shortened my life expectancy significantly. And when I was told I had about 8 to 10 years to most likely live after all my health battles, that was very shocking. I wasn't expecting that. I was in my mid-30s when I was told that, and it really threw me into some crisis to reflect on, you know, how is this going to impact me? It made me very depressed and very anxious. And I had to really spiritually reach down to myself to decide, how am I going to choose to live my life, given that I was told that? And I definitely hope to strive to live longer than that. And that is my goal. But when you're told something like that, it's very sobering. And I took that as an opportunity to decide, okay, well, how do I want to make sure I'm living my life? If that's a possibility, what what do I do with expressing myself in a meaningful way and changing my life path pretty dramatically.
And what does that look like? So in other words, when you began making those changes, can you give us some examples of what some of those changes were?
Yeah. So for instance, with my disabilities, I have chronic pain through my entire body all the time, and it's multiple pains. And with my fatigue, it's pretty intense where, you know, something like taking a shower takes a lot of my energy. Mm-hmm. Being able to walk a half of a block takes about like a third of my energy for the day. So I had to leave my PhD program. I couldn't work full-time traditional jobs anymore. And I had to really reflect and explore and experiment with what kinds of activities for livelihood and just personal expression that I could do that didn't make my body go into deeper crisis and was sustainable energetically and physically manageable.
Well, what kinds of supports, if there were any, were you able to avail yourself of?
Unfortunately, I didn't actually have many supports. I was told that when I sought out certain supports for while I was still in my doctoral program, I was told that we don't have disabled PhD students because we're too rigorous for that. And somehow equating disability with not being able to do rigorous schooling. So that didn't work out the way I was hoping. And then in terms of getting other kinds of support, just as a Black woman being in the healthcare system in the US, you know, I was already dealing with a lot of just stigma and challenges getting basic support for like my health issues, let alone adding now you're disabled and getting supports that way. So I had to get really creative and get supports more from select community members and people in my direct community and tribes who have been my primary support. Mm-hmm. I even applied for disability assistance because I was encouraged to do that. I went through the process. I was rejected. I spoke with several disabilities rights lawyers who told me that because I was so young that the system was not going to go in favor of me. And then being a Black woman applying for disability, that I would probably be fighting in court for 2 to 5 years in order to get any kind of disability status. And I didn't even have the funding to do that.
Right, right. Now tell us more about that. So once you were told that being a Black woman kind of fighting that battle would be uphill, not only uphill, it would be lengthy. Can you say a bit more about that?
Yeah. The lawyers I spoke with just were really honest about the different kinds of unconscious bias in the system. And with being Black and dealing with racism and anti-Blackness, plus being a woman and dealing with sexism, those two intersections really compound the type of challenges that Black women face in the medical system. So often, in my experience, I know I'm not alone in this, but we're not believed about our experiences. So me reporting my pain to different specialists and doctors, often I am told, well, you just have to deal with it. I have fibromyalgia as one of my chronic illnesses that causes my pain. And when speaking with specialists, I have been told, well, you don't feel pain as much as others. Well, you just have to deal with this. You're exaggerating your pain. A lot of, assumptions are made because of racist stereotypes that have historically been pervasive in medical spaces, especially towards Black women. Mm-hmm. And so that issue definitely was impacting my ability to get supports and to even go through just the process of applying for that. And in comparison to other friends who have the same conditions that I do that are also women, you know, it's like two different worlds when we talk about going to the doctor, where I don't get medication. I'm not talked to about interventions or support in that way, opposed to my white counterpart will be talked to about that.
Can I just mention, Ken, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Yeah. You were just talking about that intersection of race and gender. And I wonder where does, and how has, perhaps is a better way of putting it, how has kind of gender identity as well as sexual orientation, how has it come into play in some of these conversations and in some of these instances where you have sought, you know, medical treatment?
Yeah, my queer identity, I often find that in the majority of my medical spaces, I have not been able to be out mm-hmm. and to even share about that out of tremendous fear of having further prejudice and discrimination happen that impacts my treatment. Just being a Black woman and dealing with the oppressions that happen in the medical spaces, that was already overwhelming. And then to then add on, okay, hey, I'm queer and I have some other needs within this and my identity. I often have found that spaces are heteronormative and it's not okay to say anything. And when seeing other friends and community members who did come out in medical spaces often got treated even worse. And I had the intersection of, you know, I'm economically, do not make much money. And that impacts me in terms of classism that happens mm-hmm. in spaces. And so I just find that I couldn't talk about my sexual orientation with providers. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the forms that are provided to you make assumptions that you are heteronormative. There's not even space to indicate that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned class. So I guess the question that arises for me is whether being in Boulder helps or hinders. And it sounds like there have been obstacles and challenges, and those are obstacles and challenges that other Black women have absolutely faced. But I wonder, again, if being in Boulder has helped or hindered that. And I say that just based on resources. You know, now whether those resources are open and available is one thing, but just at least the potential of being able to tap into resources and perhaps alternative resources as well. Has that played a role?
I found in Boulder, with the exception of select providers who individually were very woke, who were advocates and were very self-educated and culturally competent. Those individuals made tremendous efforts, but the systems as a whole, oftentimes I never even was offered resources or told about resources. And some of that I believe had to definitely do with just unconscious bias. For given my issues and illnesses, you know, I struggle with certain aspects of mental health. My mental health landscape includes, you know, chronic depression and anxiety and PTSD. And even when naming those things with providers, when I was in Boulder, often I had a crickets response of, nothing was said to me about supports that are available or even being encouraged to do that. Often it was just be resilient. Well, good luck with that. And then I would later find out about resources that existed through other community members, but it was never being told to me.
Right. So let's just take a moment to remind folks that they are listening to KGNU Black Talk. Black Talk is a co-creation of the Boulder County, NAACP, and KGNU. Black Talk is a monthly segment that centers Black voices, Black thought, and Black vision. And today I have the distinct honor of speaking with Kiana Madison. So Kiana, you were talking about mental health. And, you know, we've done a program or two where we focused in on mental health issues through the lens of members of the Black community. Can you say more about that in terms of mental health and how this chronic illness, as you've been describing it to us, how it affects your overall mental health?
Well, I look at my mental health as part of my overall wellness landscape. Mm-hmm. And when living with certain chronic illnesses and disabilities that are life altering, parts of my mental health are things I had to live with for the rest of my lifetime. So if, for instance, being in chronic pain all the time, well, having anxiety and depression due to the impact of being in, a severe pain every day that's incurable, that impacts my mental health a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's something I've had to learn to live with instead of looking at mental health as something of, I'm going to treat this condition and then I'll be done with it. It's episodic and then that's it. When you're living in chronic conditions, you have to take a different approach with your mental health, especially if the illness causes, contributes to mental health conditions.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this. As I understand it, Black patients are approximately, 40% less likely to receive medication for acute pain compared to their white counterparts. Has that been your experience as well in terms of other people you know, but more specifically in terms of you, Kiana?
Yes. I have had very serious procedures and had times where I wasn't prescribed any pain medication.
None?
None. I have had surgeries and where I was under-prescribed pain medication. And when talking with other community members going through the exact same surgery at the same time, even, and going, wow, I got medication for 2 days versus you got 2 weeks or the prescription amounts. And also just having real negative experiences of being told that, well, you don't really feel pain, so you don't have to worry about that. Or you're, exaggerating on your pain. I've had nurses before tell me when I've been screaming out from pain of, you're just exaggerating. You can't be feeling that.
And tell us a bit more about why that is so common among Black patients. That whole notion of underprescribing or not prescribing at all. I have a friend whose daughter is in Memphis, Tennessee, who is managing that entire issue right now, who's in and has been in tremendous pain, but seems to be fighting her medical providers for some sort of treatment or some sort of support to help manage that pain. And where does that stem from? Where does that come from?
In my perspective, I think it comes from the systemic history of anti-Blackness and racist stereotypes towards Black folks in general in the medical system, with some of the myths and stigmas that have existed since, the days of slavery forward that still impact us, especially for Black women, being seen as, as not having pain, as the myth that Black folks have thicker skin than white folks or others, which is completely not true. And just from the dehumanization that's happened with Black folks throughout American society and over time, and how that has, deep material consequences on how we're viewed, if we're taken seriously. Some of those racist thinkings and myths being around being seen as criminal.
Right.
So if I go into the doctor, and this has happened repeatedly, and I name my pain and I seek any kind of intervention, I'm very often characterized as drug seeking, mm-hmm. just by naming that I would like help with my pain management. What are my options?
Wow. Kiana, what came first? your disabilities, the chronic pain that you are managing day in and day out, or your art? What came first?
That's a great question. For me, the chronic pain and the disabilities that have emerged in my landscape, that came first. And then my art came as an expression to help me with coping, to help me with redefining myself, given such radical changes to my body and life, and then became an essential ingredient in my overall well-being and wellness practices. And that's where I take the term up of being an inner peace gardener. Mm-hmm. And for me, expressive art, well, that could be visual art, writing, poetry, movement, all those, and mindfulness all help me to plant actively seeds of well-being to nourish my mental and emotional health and to help me cope with aspects of my physical health where there is not a cure for. There's not, even if when taking pain medications and doing other interventions, it might help me cope with it so I can still function, but it's not actually stopping or alleviating the pain totally. Mm-hmm. And that's a nature of my condition. And so art and especially paintings have really helped me with finding a way to transmute that and to use art as a way to help me find a practice peace simultaneously while also acknowledging very mindfully that I do have these pains and they do affect me. And it's okay for me to have space to acknowledge them and to somehow express what is hard to put into words with what my experience is in my body.
Well, I'm gonna give you a little challenge here. One of the benefits I think of radio is it allows us to listen. And it allows us to use our imaginations. Can you tell us, if we were to look at, and I know you are prolific, but if you could select a painting, and this may be unfair, because I'm asking you to choose among your kind of favorite children or something, but if you can choose a painting, and maybe it's something you're working on currently, can you give us kind of a description? In other words, what might we be looking at? So in other words, what I'm trying to get at is how what you've just described to us in terms of your overall health, how that looks on the canvas. So what we might see, and I realize you don't kind of always paint the same thing, but what might we see? An example of what we might see.
There would be two types of imagery that you would see that are consistently emerge in my art. One image is a more action painting or drip style painting, very similar to other abstract expressionist artists, where you would see, you know, colors, multiple colors of paint that have either been thrown on a canvas, dripped over the canvas, splattered onto the canvas. And for me, that helps me express different parts of what it feels like to be in my body and to express deeper emotions that I think that other folks can feel too. Mm-hmm. Then the other image that you may see is an abstract Buddhas. I'm a Buddhist. And so you would see images of an impression of a body in lotus position or adapted lotus position, but it's still very abstract with paints and it's just a sense or impression of it. Because for me in my body, I'm trying to always hone myself and focus on that sense of inner peace, even though it's still very messy and it's not always crystal and clear. And so you would see abstracted versions of a bodhisattva or a Buddha.
Uh-huh. Well, that's wonderful. Well, Kiana, we're coming to time, at least in this part of Black Talk, this segment of Black Talk. So what I want to do is to thank you again for joining us and being so open and honest about you know, what you've been experiencing and giving us some idea of what it's like. And you just said this, to be in your body, to be in your body. So again, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your willingness to be here today. So KJ and you listeners, you know how we do. So we're going to continue the conversation on the other side. But until then, I'm going to sign off. You've been listening to Black Talk. Black Talk is a co-creation of the Boulder County NAACP and KGNU. And Black Talk airs the third Monday of every month at 8:35 a.m. So we're hoping you will join us, not only for future episodes, but for some of the special programming that we do as well. So again, Kiana Madison, I want to thank you for being here today. And as I said, we will continue our conversation on the other side. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm talking about roots. I came.